going to like school, and I remember the like uniforms we had to wear and like our hair, you know, like actually we had like a boys' cut. All I remember is like we looked like two boys, because like, you know, that like bald. Yeah. I was a dark kid. I was chubby. It wasn't great.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra. And welcome to Hamro Yatra. Today, our guest is Dr. Christina Gauchin. Born in Nepal, Christina moved to England with her family when she was only 6 years old. A dentist by profession, Christina enjoys her job and the impact it has in her patients. In this episode, we go over how Christina got interested in pursuing dentistry, her experience working as a dentist in England, and how she dealt with having to uproot her life to move to the States and get qualified all over again to practice dentistry again. For those who have been through this, knows it isn't an easy process. But with a smile, a positive attitude, and a strong support network, Christina has now graduated from University of Boston with a doctorate of medicine in dentistry. Christina is persistent and sees every obstacle as an opportunity to learn more. I'm excited to see Christina continue her journey in the West Coast later this year and have no doubt that she will be able to overcome any challenges that comes her way with a smile on her face. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review. You can also financially support us on thisishamroyatra.com/support. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Christina. Thank you for your time today, and I'm so glad to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure, absolutely. I was so happy when you reached out. I said yes straight away to this opportunity, so thank you.
So glad. Now, Christina, we start our episodes with icebreakers. The first question being, if you could pick any superpower, what would you choose?
Oh, okay. I think it'd be flying, definitely. So I love traveling. I always have since I was little. My parents were pretty outdoorsy, so they would always take us out. So I feel like, I think if that was a superpower, I'd fly, because you don't have to get on a plane, so you could just go everywhere and just whiz around.
You don't have to worry about lockdowns.
Exactly. And like, you can stay away from people. Yeah. definitely flying.
And if you could choose one last dish to have for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Ooh. That's a really tough one, because I'm definitely a carb person. So it'd definitely be like rice or bread or something. So it's really hard, because obviously we grew up in our staple, like dal bhat masu. Like I think, especially our thakali thali as well. Oof, I don't know if you know, but it's like one of the best foods ever.
Thinking about it now.
Yeah, I know, I'm drooling now. I really miss like proper good home food. It's really sad. So it'd either be that, or I do love Italian too, like carbonara or you know, pasta. I love anything creamy. Yeah. Anything bad for you?
One of my doctors suggested like ages ago that I should probably try and go gluten-free for at least a month to see how things happen. Yeah. And I just thought, everything I love in life is gluten. Everything.
That's really like, tough. Yeah.
And I tried having gluten-free bread, gluten-free pasta. Yeah. It is just not the same. Like, yeah, it's almost like, sorry to those people who are gluten-free, but it tastes like you're not eating cardboard. Like, it's missing something vital.
Yes. Oh, I totally agree. I know. And you hear that a lot now, don't you? And also like vegan, it's similar to like vegan desserts and things, or like eggless cakes. I mean, I've had some that are okay, but it's just, I don't know. I just feel like it's not the same with all the ingredients. Yeah, it's definitely missing something.
If you could go back into time, into Nepal's history, is there any particular moment that you would want to go back into?
I would love to go maybe to the time where like they were the first mountain climbers. I think that would be really interesting. So like not just Everest, but like, you know, the whole Annapurna range. Yeah. There's been a lot of mountain climbers, and I'd love to like witness that, how, you know, it all happened and the records that they hit, you know. I think it's really, really amazing, especially without all the equipment that they have now. It's just amazing to think like how they could have done it back then. You know, it's pure just your skill and your, you know,
determination, right? Right.
Yeah.
And I guess the atmosphere as well, like the first time you do it.
Yes, that feeling. And yeah. I think that recognition, and you know, that person or whoever, I don't actually know who the first one was, but I'm sure it was someone in Nepal or Sherpas. I think for them, they probably didn't realize what a, you know, big deal it was, exactly, or what trend that they were going to set for, you know, other record breakers. So yeah, that's definitely a time that I'd love to go back.
Very interesting. No one's ever mentioned that before.
Yeah, that did just come out of the blue to myself. So, but no, I definitely love Nepal for its you know, beautiful landscape and the mountains. All my friends always say, when are you going to take me? And it's not like, you know, I can climb, you know, I can climb the mountains myself, but it's definitely something that's really, really unique to our country. And I think, you know, we should also promote that.
Definitely. And now, Christina, before we get into where you are today, I thought we could go back into childhood and talk about how your childhood was. How were you as a child?
Yeah. So I don't, you know, it's funny because me and my sister are 2 years apart. So I was 6 when I moved to England from Nepal, and my sister was 8. And it's amazing how much more she remembers than me. So I'm always a little bit like, I don't remember that. But I definitely remember going to school in Nepal, like, you know, like kindergarten, I think it was like the early stages. And then I remember moving, because we also went to Hong Kong for like a year or two, because dad was in the army.
Was that before moving to the UK?
Yes. So my sister was actually born there, and I think I went when I was little or something. I think my dad had to go back. So yeah, I don't remember much, but I definitely remember going to like school, and I remember the like uniforms we had to wear, and like our hair, you know, like actually we had like a boys' cut. All I remember is like we looked like two boys, because like, you know, that like bald. Yeah. I was a dark kid. I was chubby. It wasn't great, but I thought it was cute. But yeah, so I don't remember a big amount, but definitely the stages when I was moving to England, that I can start remembering my early memories. So a lot of it is actually England, because I think I was only 6, just under 6 when I moved.
Do you remember much of the move, like once coming from Nepal to UK, how it was for you then?
Yeah, I just remember like we were in this big airplane, obviously a normal airplane now I think about it, but I think it was like one of my first times probably getting on a big, you know, plane. And I remember like lots of other families just like me. So and all the dads were already in England. So it was just the mums and the kids. So it's literally because we were one of the first families to come to England. Because I think it was a new thing that they were doing. Like initially they weren't allowing families to join the soldiers,
right?
But from 1997 they were, so we were one of the first families that actually came to England and were, you know, reunited with our dad. So yeah, it was a great thing. I just remember, yeah, big plane, lots of kids, lots of mums, I think just having a hard time controlling us because it was a long flight as well. So from Nepal to England is, you know, a good, there's a transit, and at least 12, it's probably 12 hours more in total. So yeah, I think I just remember that. And then we came in August, so it was actually a really beautiful day. I remember like one of the first nights in our new home, we would go to sleep because it was like 9 p.m.
Yeah.
But when we looked outside at 10 p.m., there was literally like, I could see the sun.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, that is so weird. Like, it's at nighttime, you know, when it's 7 p.m., 8 p.m., it's already dark, wherever, you know, we were before Nepal. But here it was like still sunny. It was really, really odd. So like, I couldn't get my head around that. I was thinking, where am I? but it was really beautiful, but it was definitely a strange feeling. So yeah, I think that's a nice odd memory.
During summertime and like fall is absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
It is. It's so unique.
Yeah, definitely. But if you come during wintertime, I think that's the worst. Like you start wondering, why am I even here?
Yes, because sunlight and darkness play such a role in your mood. And I think, I'm sure a lot of people are getting aware of that now, but definitely it does. And I think winter is just a terrible time. As much as we love Christmas and, you know, like the fun stuff, holiday stuff, it can be really irritating, sometimes.
Yeah. Now, in 2015, Christina, you graduated from Uni of Liverpool with bachelor's of dental surgery.
Yes.
Now, is this a field you've always been interested in?
So, I don't particularly have anyone in my family that is a dentist. So I wasn't really influenced early, I would say. Mm. But I knew that I loved science in school. I liked maths as well, a little bit of English, but I definitely liked science, biology more. Mm. And I knew that I would want to go into something scientific, you know, not necessarily research or academic, but something, you know, that also integrated meeting people, and because I love to chat, I love to I'm quite social, and I think it just makes such a difference that, you know, I really do care like what someone thinks or how someone is. So I think that's that natural ability of mine to just speak to people comfortably. That's something that I knew that I could, you know, use to my strength. So definitely some science, and then something that, you know, I would connect with people on a daily basis. So that led me to think, you know, definitely medical field, you know, optician field, dental, or pharmacy, you know, things like that. Something that I would be in that type of setting. And then when I started looking into it more, I shadowed a dentist in back home in Colchester. And so I really enjoyed it because dentistry is very unique. I think a lot of people don't know, because as much as it is studying, it's so practical. Like you literally use your hands all the time. Like you speak, but you actually do the work. So it's a lot of practical element to it and a lot of manual dexterity. So I've always liked using my hands because, I mean, to think like I would have an office job, you know, like I really don't think I could do that. So like that's why this was such a unique job to me. And it's something that just fit all the boxes, and I just thought, you know what, like I'm gonna go for it, and I pursued it, and I'm so happy I did.
And then you started working as an associate dentist right away after graduation.
Now, yes,
this is something that I've always wondered about, because you know, once you graduate with any other degree, like you have to go to career networking events, you have to network with people, like apply to thousands of jobs before you land one.
Yeah.
So with someone coming from dental background, is it easier to find a job after your graduation?
So yes, definitely. That's also one thing that I knew was an advantage to this profession, was that there's always sort of a job guarantee. We have a very high percent, same as I think for medics, nurses, anything in healthcare is always needed and in demand, especially in a national health system like England. So it was something that, you know, that I didn't have to stress about, because obviously after studying, you want a good job.
You don't want to have to stress about applying to jobs after you just
completed. It's another headache, isn't it? So definitely that was also another key factor in me choosing it. After you graduate, basically you have to do 1 year of, it's almost like called a residency, but it's called vocational training or dental foundation training. And that year is basically for new graduates, because we don't always get the most experience in school. So they set you up with a mentor. So you go to dental practice and you work, let's say, Monday to Friday, like 9 to 5. You have a, you know, full diary of patients. They ease you in, but there's also a mentor, like someone that's there, the owner maybe, who's been doing it for years and years.
Yeah.
So basically they're there if you need, you know, if you ever get stuck, because obviously it's a lot of new things that you're going to be exposed to. So that's why it was a great, great tool. And I think it's, you know, every country should have something like that. And I think a lot do, because, you know, as newly graduates, like we're not totally ready, you know, to tackle on, you know, dental pain, or you know, like joint pain, or anything that, you know, we haven't been used to. So it was definitely a really good system. So I really did like that. And then Fridays we would have to meet up with other newly graduates, and we would we would like basically do like a peer review. We'd talk about our week, you know, our ups and downs,
as share stories.
Yeah. And then we'd have like study days as well. So, and then Saturday, Sunday was off. So that's always good.
That's lovely. You still get to help people use all the knowledge you have, exactly. But you also have that work-life balance, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a perfect job to me. Yeah. But I know some people just don't like, you know, people's mouths or, you know, this and that. And that's totally personal preference. So I get that totally. But I think it's definitely unique that, you know, we get to really, like, not necessarily make a difference every day, but, you know, some people we'd really do, you know, we can give them back their smile, and that's a big thing for their, you know, self-esteem, their, you know, just confidence. Mental health, confidence, exactly, and also getting them out of pain. So, you know, say if it's hurting them, we can take the nerve out, we can do a root canal with them, we can crown it, and then the pain is gone. So it's amazing that we can do something there and then. So I think that's what I really like as well.
Yeah. I also saw from your Instagram that you were also involved in like facial aesthetics.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So I think if there's a big trend, and there still is, and that's worldwide. A lot of professionals now can do they can do advanced, but Botox would be for the upper face. So your wrinkles here and here, and around the eyes, and then lower they can do fillers. So to add volume to where you've lost, because as we age, we lose volume.
Yeah.
So lip fillers, you know, these lines you can get rid of, and you can do jaw, chin, nose. You can do so much now with just fillers. Amazing. And it's non-surgical, so you don't have to, you know, go under general anesthesia. You know, there's a lot of risk to that, so this is something that is quite quick, and it's good results, and it's, you know, patients do like it. So
did you have to train for that?
Yes, I just did the foundation course, but that covers basically upper face Botox and lower filler. And it was a weekend course in London. Yeah, I did it with some doctors. Yeah, that have been doing it. It was great. It was really, really amazing. Yeah.
I was seeing like the before and after pictures, and they really do look different. Like, it doesn't look unnatural.
Yes, yes. And I think that's really important to stress to people, because obviously we see some horrible photos of like too much work being done. And I don't even know if half of them are real or not, but it's definitely scary. And I think that as professionals, as medical practitioners, we have to definitely promote sort of natural aesthetic, you know, because that's, you know, not normal, and it's not influenced to, you know, young women and men. So, yeah.
And Christina, in about 2018, you then uprooted your life in the UK and moved to the US with your husband. In that process, in a sense, you had to redo your education to be able to practice in the States, right? Which I assume is a very long and daunting process.
It really is. It really is.
So firstly, just even finding out that you have to go through this process, how did you deal with that information?
It was definitely overwhelming. It was definitely a lot to take in. I didn't do it as quickly as I could have. So we were long distance for a little bit because I was still working in England, and I didn't want to just quit and leave. You know, they for most jobs in England, you have to have a 3-month notice period. So, you know, it's not like a quick, you can just leave and go. So I really took my time, because there was a lot of information online, and there's a lot of people that I connected with, because, you know, it was a big, big commitment, and it was a big life decision, not just a career one, but life, you know, like where you're gonna settle down, where you're gonna possibly raise a family, all these.
Like, you grew up in the UK, right?
I am British, like by heart of Japanese, but completely, like, you know, British. Like, England is my roots, like that's really my home. It's where my family is, my mom, dad, my sisters, brothers. So it was definitely a big thing. So I did take my time, so it wasn't like rushed or anything. After getting married, he was in England for a little bit, my husband, Summit. But afterwards, his job, you know, required him to either move back or relocate basically back to America. So he had to sort of step back. I was like, oh, do I go now or do I go later? Because it wasn't an easy process. It's not like just moving and applying for a job. Like you said, I had a lot to do. I had like about 4 or 5 exams to do even before I applied to school.
Wait, 4 exams before you even apply?
Yes, it was ridiculous. Yeah, like there's a big list, like it's and, you know, people take years even doing it. So I once I decided, which was, you know, a whole lengthy process, I decided to, okay, that's it. Like, I gave my notice in, I moved initially, and then I did my exams. So basically they're board exams is what we call it, National Dental Board, part one and part two.
Mm.
They're basically all the foundation of basic sciences. So it covers all the sciences, medical, head, body, neck, everything, basically, right. Anatomy, everything.
Is that like MCATs?
Similar, very similar. And like USMLE, what the medics
have, right.
to practice here as well. So it was all those things. And then part two is more dental related. So that was a lot easier for me since you know, I was already practicing that. But the part one was terrible. I needed about 3 months to study for that.
Wow.
So every day, you know, I moved my in-laws, husband-in-laws were in Florida then.
Yeah.
So even though the weather was great, so it was felt like a little bit of a holiday. It definitely was a lot. Like, I did 3 months to do that. Finally did the exam, and then I did my part two. That was quicker, like what, less than a month I did that. And then I was pretty much good to go, but I had to do TOEFL test, you know, the English test. Even though I'm British, I had to do that as well.
Wow.
So basically that's for any international students, or let's say dentists, they have to do that. So I had to do that. Then I had to translate all of my qualifications and degrees and GCSE and A-levels. I did the IB.
Yeah.
And my English diploma. I had to basically translate that to the American version.
System. How long did that take?
And again, that takes like weeks to months sometimes, because they want original transcript as well. So you have to contact your school, and you know, this is like years and years ago. You're like, do they remember me? So it's like a lot of headache, a lot of paperwork, you know, and sometimes it can get delayed, stuck, this and that.
I now get the reason behind your deep, heavy sigh before.
Yes, you had that sigh. Oh my God, my husband's going to hear that too. He knows. Always lie or regret coming all the time now. That's why it was such a big commitment. Like, part of me was thinking I can work and do this, because obviously I was earning, it was great, I was in England, I was all, you know, already sort of settled. But I just couldn't, because it was almost like a full-time job, almost having to get all this documents together. So once that was done, then the application process, oh my God, to dental schools in US. So basically there are like, I think 30 to 40 schools I could apply to. And obviously not all of them do there's more schools, but only these do the international program. So they're a little bit shorter than the traditional dental school in America.
Oh, okay. So since you were already practicing as a dentist internationally,
Mm-hmm.
you don't have to go through the whole program. So how long is the program then?
So typically in US is 4 years. However, they require 4 years of undergrad as well. So the 4 year of dental school is called a graduate program. So in total, it's actually 8 years.
Yeah.
But just the dental portion is 4 years. So we only had to do 2 years or two and a half. Some programs are 2.5. But basically, the minimum is 2 years that you're enrolled in a US accredited school to actually get your license eventually. Because each state, you need their license to actually work.
Yeah.
And to, you know, see patients. So there are different routes. Like, that was obviously the more traditional way to do it, to get the DMD or DDS.
Yeah.
But there are other routes. Like, you can be a faculty or a teacher at universities, hospital schools, and they can eventually get you accredited or give you the title.
Mm.
But it's, you know, it's only a few positions, and it's not like, you know, that simple. And again, it's rerouting your whole life and everything, and the uncertainty, at least this way, even though it's harder, I knew that I had the freedom to move afterwards, because, you know, I didn't want to be stuck in one state. US is so big, you know, that's the last thing I wanted. So I was like, just do it, get the hard work done. 2 years, I'm almost done. So no regrets now, I think.
What was the application process like? Because you said there's like 30 or 40 schools. Did you apply to all of them? Or?
No, I applied to about 10, because each application costs money. So US is totally different to UK.
I was just speaking with someone who got into a medical school recently, and the horror story of how much each application costs.
Yeah,
and
it's disgusting.
Yeah.
It is. You think it's a corrupt system. You really do, because you think, you know, like, it's just an application. It's not even like it's an interview that you're or anything. Everything is money in the US. The system is something that I've learned. you know, it is a capitalist society, so I can understand why it is the way it is and how, you know, the pros and cons of everything. So yeah, it was basically you have to, it's a portal. Yeah. So at least that way it was easy. Most of the schools are in a system.
And so you didn't have to go into like different.
No. Although it's called CAPID, although you have to make sure you send the specific documents that each school needs. So most of them need your English test, your board exams, your transcripts, but some, obviously the application fee, which are from $100 to $250 just for the application. But some need extra stuff, like maybe, you know, letter of recommendation or, you know, fee or work experience, you know, all these things. Like the, some of them have like little different requirements, so that you had to check specifically on their website. And then at least you, once you uploaded all the documents, you could just submit application. So that was fairly well organized system as well. And then when you get called for interview, you have to pay.
Wait, so you pay for the application and then you pay when you get called for interview as well?
Yes. And then you pay for the bench test too. So because we're a lot of hands-on, you have to, some schools also require you to show your skills, because obviously you're doing a shortened program, so they expect you to be at a certain level. So you have to cut teeth. So you have to either cut a crown prep, which is like a cap preparation, or you have to do a filling type of preparation. And they will check that. So if you're not at a certain level, you're out, basically. So, and all these exams and interviews, they're part of the interviews. They cost like from 500 to 2,500.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like 2-3 days interviews sometimes. Yeah.
It is ridiculous.
I don't know why they make it so hard. I mean, I think it's because of the competition here. Like they're obviously, it's a good job to have, again, dentist here. Like they can make good money. So I feel like, I think it's the way, if they don't do this, then they're going to get an influx of, you know, foreign dentists. So I get that it's sort of like a protection, you know, mechanism, but it's definitely, you know, daunting.
Yeah, but it's also a bit sad that it's keeping potential really good dentists away as well, right? Because they might not be able to afford to do this for like 10, 20 schools.
Exactly. And that's just the beginning, right? So like that's not, if that's just getting into school, and then school is another 80 to 100, you're more than 100,000 a year. So it's a big investment, it's a big commitment, and you know, it's a lot of things that play into role. And you're right, there are a lot of dentists here that never do it, you know, they plan to, but one of their husband or wife does it and then the other one doesn't. So it is really sad. I know a lot of friends, family who are just like, oh, some just couldn't pass the exam, or you know, some just busy with raising kids or this and that. And it is really sad because you think, you know, they're deserving as well, you know.
Yeah, I did my undergrad in the States, so I know how expensive it is to study as an international student. And then I went to Australia after, and my 4 years degree was not equivalent to 4 years in Australia. So even though I did honors in the US, I still had to do one more year of like proper honors. I was already very annoyed and frustrated at the whole process. Yeah. So I can't even imagine what you had to go through, like to do this extra work, which just seems a lot of time and money.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's my dad wasn't very happy when I said I was moving. He was like, you know, you did 5 years, you know, six actually with the like foundation training, 6 years in England. And he just thought, you know, that was, I've already suffered enough. You know?
Exactly. It's not like you had it easy in the UK, you
England,
know?
exactly. And a lot of my friends here are always like, oh, you know, England is as, you know, modernized and as US.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
Yeah, but I get that they don't want to make any, discrimination, yes, and exceptions. And I get that, you know, I'm all about fairness and equality. Yeah. So it's something that I just thought, you know what, like, it's at least it's fair, you know, in that sense. Yeah, my dad wasn't very happy.
Understandable.
Absolutely. I know. He helped us through so much the first time. And I think felt bad that we had to go, you know, through it again, almost alone here. But no, it's all an experience, and you never stop learning. So I never say, you know, it's a waste or anything, because even though you're relearning some of the same stuff, you're looking at it from a different perspective, or from a more knowledgeable standpoint. So I feel like you can actually go into a different depth with it. Mm. So it was definitely not a waste. So yeah, that was the worry for me was, you know, do I spend all this money and what if it's complete waste, you know? But no, I'm definitely, I've learned a lot in school here.
That's good to hear. And there is light at the end of this tunnel because you recently graduated from Boston University.
Yes, I did.
With Doctor of Dental Medicine. Mm-hmm. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
How do you feel?
You know what? It's been a roller coaster because I think just adapting to a different system, education system, is definitely a lot to take in. Compared to England, we had so many exams in the US. I don't know if that was for you in undergrad. Oh my God, we had exam every week, you know, like they really wouldn't give us a break. And, you know, even when we had holidays, that we had an exam straight away, the next, you know, the week we were back. Mm-hmm. So we had to be on top of it. And, you know, this is a whole 2 years doesn't seem like a lot sometimes, but you know, that the year that we had all those exams, it really felt like it was not ending. It was like, yeah, you know, when you tick these exams, but there's so many more that's coming, you're just like, oh my gosh. So I feel like that I'm still not over that trauma necessarily. and yeah, I'm very, very happy though. I can't actually believe it flew by. And obviously with COVID and everything, we're very lucky that it didn't impact our learning. Yeah. And it didn't impact our graduation. So I'm very thankful for that. But yeah, I feel great. Thank you.
So what's next for you then, Christina?
So yes, like I said, like the world is our oyster, right? So
yeah.
like I said, I definitely wanted to move states. So I studied in Boston. It was a lovely, lovely city. A really, really nice place. Actually, very similar to like Europe. It's very Europe influenced. Mm. So yeah. I felt like, you know, it wasn't too different from home, but I've always liked West Coast and like the sunshine. So California has definitely been our goal, you know, state. So we're gonna try and move there in September.
Oh, yeah.
So fingers crossed. I have got a job lined up, but you know, you never know how it's gonna go. So hopefully it's all gonna be fine.
Would you have to do any tests or things to change your license, or is it very easy?
No. So now I've done the part as part of the school, they put us through a licensing exam. So there's like three components. There's two practical components, and then there's a theory base. So we did all that in school. Mm-hmm. In the weekends, we had exam on the weekends. It was like 6 a.m. And, you know, like these examiners would come sort of from different schools,
right,
and basically check our work. So it wasn't biased or anything like that. So it was a grueling process again, the licensing exams. Once that's all done, we literally just wait for our diploma, which is the certificate that we get here as soon as we finish, which is going to be hopefully this month, next month or so.
Yeah.
And then we submit that to the licensing board of whichever state we want to practice in. And then they'll issue the license, and then that's it. So no more exams. We're done.
Oh, you're done. You can finally just start practicing, living your life.
Yeah, finally. I know, I feel like I do deserve just to, you know, settle down and make a home for myself somewhere. Yeah,
and it'll be really nice in the West Coast as well.
I know, I hope so. I mean, it's got everything, you know, like weather, beach,
yeah,
mountains, yeah. And it's actually, the landscape really reminds me of Nepal too, like you know, like valleys and things like that. It's beautiful.
Yeah. That's one of the things I missed when I was in London, because the beaches in London, they're not really nice.
No,
like I tried to go to Brighton and like some other places, but yeah, it's like gravel. It's not even proper sand. And the water looks disgusting.
It's like brown, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm just not going to try. So I was like, because I used to live in Sydney before I moved to London. And I was like, just thinking of the warm weather and the beaches. And I'm like, oh my God.
I know. It is a bit depressing. England can be. It's very gloomy. Mm. It's a lot.
And it's like a long time, like winter.
Yeah, it is long, definitely.
Now, Christina, having worked in different countries, dealing with so many changes, being resilient, what do you think success is to you now?
Oh, that's a good one. So, you know, I always used to compare success to like, you know, your status or your position of power, authority.
Mm.
But now, you know, I'm more mature and, you know, grown up a lot. I think it's actually success is if you're truly happy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's if you feel like you're in a position that every day you can just wake up and be happy, you know, be excited to start your day, you know, yeah. not be like down about something or not have something in your mind all the time. I think overall success is a lot of things, you know, not just your work or your family or it's actually more to actually do with your mental health almost. Mm. And I think, you know, a lot of that's been highlighted in the last year or so since the pandemic, since all the, you know, issues of depression, anxiety. It really circles down to just your overall well-being and, you know, inner peace almost, I guess, you know, just living day as it comes, you know, calm, positive. And I think that's ultimately success is if you're a calm, collected person, really. And I think someone who can just, you know, live each day, live in the moment, be present, and, you know, not stuck on our phones all the time, which we are all a little bit guilty of.
I think you really struck a nail there, because a lot of times people, even if they're really rich, they might not feel they're exactly. successful, or they might not feel exactly. content, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas someone living in a hut with very minimum things, like bare minimum things in their lives, might feel like they're the most successful because they're content with the way their exactly. life is. So I think you said it pretty well in the sense that it is how you take things, exactly. right? Exactly. Not how other people view it, but how you view it.
Absolutely. And I think we used to always, growing up in, you know, small communities, we used to always just worry so much about what other people think yeah. and like what they're going to say, you know, oh, I can't do this, you know, all this. And it, ultimately, it's not about that. And I think also like the pandemic taught us that as well. You know, you are really just not alone, but it is, you know, you're in control of yourself and your mind. And it's really up to you to, you know, make something better or worse, yeah. because it's all in your head, you know. So I think that is really important to try and grasp, because yeah, it's if you just always compare or always think about other people, then who's thinking about exactly. you know, if yeah. you're not.
And I can see that in like just your experience as well. When the chance came to move to the States, you could have easily just said I can't do it, or mm-hmm. when you learned about the whole changes, having yeah. to redo, you could have said, this is too difficult. I don't want to bother. I've already paid my dues. Like, why should I do this? But, you know, you changed your attitude towards it. It's like, you know what? Yeah, it's going to take a while, but I can do it. And yeah. here you are. You've done it.
I know. I am also a living testament, isn't I? Yeah, no, all of my friends are always shocked. They're like, oh my God, how did you do it? They're always like, no. The thought of like them having to restudy, move everything, like as much as they love the lifestyle things here, they just think, I could never do that. It's almost like I would just give up, or yeah, I would start another profession. And as much as I understand that, you know, for me, I love dentistry, so I knew that it was something that I just didn't want to give up. So that was one. Two, you know, I had a great support system, great husband, you know, family, his parents were really, really supportive. You know, they were just like, you know, do what you want, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, what's best for you guys. And, you know, you don't hear that a lot, do you? You know, you hear parents being like, you should do this.
Yeah, you should find a job right now.
Exactly. A lot of pressure is on. But no, so I think that also helps too. It wasn't just me. It was definitely, you know, family, and it goes a long way. You know, when you have a support system, you really feel motivated and encouraged. And I think that is a big thing too.
100%. To wrap things up, Christina, if there's any advice you could give to our listeners who might be in a similar situation where, you know, there's lots of change happening and they're afraid to follow their passion, what would you suggest?
I mean, definitely follow your dreams, you know, as a little bit corny as that sounds. If you are passionate about something and you think you're good at it, or something that you are really interested in, follow it, or at least try. I would always say try. I'm a big believer in just like trial and error, you know, going for it. And if it doesn't work out, at least you know that, you know, it wasn't for me, like I did try. So, and you know, this was the same case. If I didn't try, I would never have done it. And, you know, if I didn't go for it, it wouldn't happen. And ultimately it was up to me to make that decision and that sacrifice and that commitment, right? So if you, you know, believe in yourself, that's also another thing. it's great to, again, have a support system. But if you don't, you know, you are strong enough, believe in yourself, really. And, you know, there are so many opportunities out there that we don't always see, or, you know, we don't see at the beginning. Yeah. But once we get more, you know, doing research, reaching out to people, definitely there are opportunities there that, you know, you can get. So definitely, you know, we live in a modern society now, you know, especially Australia, UK, US, youth in all these developed countries, definitely, you know, they should really push themselves and just find it, you know, in them to just believe in themselves and at least try, you know, make that effort, make that first step towards creating a better future, because ultimately it's up to them, you know, no one else can do it for you. So believe in yourself.
Thank you for that. I think it's so true that a lot of times people don't even attempt, right? Exactly. They think about the incident and then they're like, oh, it's just too much work. I can't do it. But
exactly,
like you said, if you don't believe in yourself, who is, right? Oh, like it is your life. So you are able to drive your life the way you want it
to be.
So you're the only person that's to be blamed. You're the only person that's to be congratulated at the end of the day.
But yeah, you said it perfectly. No, that's really true. I think the sooner you know that, the better, you know, like get yourself, you know, in that mentality of just trying, definitely. And just doing all you can.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time again, Christina. It was lovely to have you here with us today.
Likewise.
And just being inspired to take ownership of your life. I couldn't think of a better way to start my day and I guess end your day.
Thank you so much. Honestly, it was really nice to speak to you. And thank you for doing this. The platform you've created is amazing. I think it's just amazing. Without people like you, you know, this wouldn't happen. So honestly, it's amazing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations as much as I do, please share with your friends and family. If you'd like to share your feedback, you can reach us on Instagram at hamro.yatra or email askhamroyatra@gmail.com. I love hearing from you, so keep them coming.